Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our Rock and our Redeemer. I pray that your love may overflow more and more with knowledge and full insight. This is a prayer that Paul said 2,000 years ago to the people in the city of Philippi who were supporting him, people who were trying to form a little church. He wrote this prayer from prison. I pray that your love may overflow more and more with knowledge and full insight. A prayer that people 2,000 years ago certainly needed, a prayer we certainly need today. I kept looking at this prayer, it kept drawing me in, and I thought, what beautiful language this is, this idea of overflowing. And as I told the kids, usually in my life, overflowing is not something good, right? Because usually overflowing means I've got to clean something up, it's making a mess. But what a beautiful image here to think about the love of God filling us so deeply that it spills out of us. That the love we give to the world is so great we can't even control it. If we would know the grace and the love, the amount of love that God and Jesus have for us, it would come right out of us. What a beautiful image and a beautiful thing to pray for. But then there's the second part of this too, which I kept going to. This idea about knowledge and full insight. What is Paul talking about here? Of course, he's not talking about knowledge like know your math facts, know your world geography, right? This is a bigger knowledge. A knowledge about how to love better. A knowledge about how to live in community. An understanding of what really matters in life and what we are called to as God's people. This is what Paul was praying for. The people of Philippi were a brand new community. Most of them were Gentiles, so they weren't even used to Jewish traditions. And they were people who were living in Roman authority, so taking some chances, trying to form this fledgling little community. And they needed help. They needed to know what to do. They were uncertain about how to move forward. And so Paul, who's one of their leaders, writes them, and he actually writes this letter from prison to them. And I love this. Notice this. He doesn't send them a to-do list. He doesn't send them a list about how to make the perfect committee structure or what the best promotional materials might be for the church. What he sends them is a prayer that they might love. Because Paul knows what we too often forget, that the more we learn to love and the better we learn to love, when we can do that, we will get the knowledge and insight we need and other things will fall into place. This isn't the only time Paul writes letters with these kind of words. Everybody loves the 1 Corinthians verse, right? That's always read at weddings. Love is patient, love is kind. These were also words written to an early church Christian community trying to figure out what to do. And what does Paul tell them again? Love each other, right? First, he always says he's very grateful and thankful for them, because he certainly was. And then he tells them, learn how to love. Now, I know the Philippians needed to hear that, and I'm sure we do today as well. This whole idea of knowledge and understanding, aren't we all just trying to figure it out? Aren't we constantly trying to figure out what the best thing is to do, how to live in the best way we can or know how? I have to say that as a pastor, for all of the pastoral conversations I have, one theme that runs through so many of them, probably the question I have heard more often or the statement I've heard more often than anything else is, Pastor, I just don't know what to do.
give us is that manual for every situation in life, right? The exact check off, if this is what I do in every situation, it will be great. What God does give us through Paul and through the entire Bible is the command over and over and over to love one another. Because that is all we need in our manual. The rest really will work itself out. It seems so simple. I know it's so hard. But I started thinking about our lives. And I started wondering, what if we let off all of our decision-making processes with the question, how do I show love here? How do I show love? How do you make your decisions? Most likely, we make our decisions based on self-preservation, our ego. A lot of times we make them based on fear. Fears that we have about what might happen or what might not happen, about if we'll have enough or not have enough. We make so many decisions based on some sort of self-preservation, closing things up, trying to protect ourselves. What if instead we started asking ourselves at the turns in our lives, what is the loving thing to do here? How do I show love for people in this situation? I started thinking about all the different areas of my life and if I did that. So what about at the church, right? What if we, this house that's really supposed to be about love, started asking ourselves that question more often? Instead of asking ourselves, well, do we have enough money to do that? Or how are we going to get more people in the chairs? Or all of these other questions that we so often get wrapped up in. How about if every decision started with the question, who is this loving toward? How is this loving? How is this showing God's love to the community and to those inside as well? What if we started with that question? How about in our lives and in our homes, if we stopped and said, what is the loving thing to do or say here? If we took that pause. Thich Nhat Hanh says there is a holy pause we should all take before we react to something. A holy pause so that we can listen to what God might be telling us. And maybe that's the moment where we ask ourselves, what is the loving thing to do here? It can be in the relationships in our family, but it even trickles down into things like the stuff we buy, right? So if you have the resources to do it, and you have two products in front of you, one that is made by bad labor, by people who aren't being paid a fair wage, and by things that are exploiting the earth, or you can buy something that is made by people who are paid a fair wage and use good earth practices. What's more loving to do? Those are decisions we make all of the time. We can be asking ourselves these from the biggest meta parts of our lives down to our purchases. What about at your workplace? Here's a place where people too often don't think about love. They only think about the work they have to get done, right? And too often in workplaces, it becomes about the bottom line, which is always what? Money, right? Money. It's always about the money. Which, by this is my side note, but the longer and longer I live, the more I really, all those things you can't serve God and money, it is the truth, right? Money. Money is what so often will lead us down roads that aren't loving. And in businesses and workplaces, we are so busy making decisions based on how they might impress the boss or keep costs down or you name it, right? Keep our reputation intact. And too often we don't ask ourselves, how are we loving each other, and how are we loving the people we serve in this place? And that can happen in office buildings, and it can happen in schools. It can happen in the place that you work. My husband had a wonderful, wonderful cleaning woman at Columbia a few years back. She retired. Her name was Dolores. And he got into this great relationship with her, and they would chat, and he knew her, and he took the time to love her.
many people on that floor who didn't even know her name. And she cleaned their office every day, often while they were sitting in there. We can take the time to love one another, to know each other's names, to make relationships, even in the place we work. And then what about out in the community? Cars. Oh, how the roads could use us behind our wheels, asking how we can better love, right? I think cars, besides money, cars might be the worst place where human, psyche is brought out, right? All the rage, all the impatience. Two Lents ago, and I've told you this story, for my Lent discipline, I decided when I drove through Mount Kisco, I would always let people in. So if there was a stop sign and people were trying to get in or out, you know, a parking lot. And in just showing that little bit of love, and I'm going to call it that, for other people, my whole driving changed, right? I learned to see people in a different way. I became less impatient as I drove through downtown Mount Kisco, which can be very patience testing, right? We can practice love. Because the thing about this love that Paul talks about and Jesus talks about, it's not some sort of mushy feeling you have for others. You don't even have to like someone to love them. What Jesus talks about in loving is to feed and to clothe and to lift up and to humanize, right? To help people see God's image in themselves, to lift up the lowly. That is what we are called to, direct actions to help others. That is love. We can practice that. And the more we do it, the more we want to do it, it overflows in our lives and it changes us. And pretty soon, crazy things are happening. I was reading a book called Lest Innocent Blood Be Shed, and it's about a community in France that saved a lot of people during the Holocaust, especially children. And there's a story about the wife of the pastor, and the pastor was like running this sort of sheltering of the Jewish people. And the pastor was being arrested, and the police came to arrest him. And when they came to arrest him, his wife invited them to sit down for dinner. Can you imagine? But what her response was when people, she's a very practical person, first of all. So most of the people in this book, when they got asked, why do you do this? And they're like, what do you mean, why do we do it? Like, people needed to be saved, so we just did, right? It wasn't even a question because this love was overflowing from them. So when she was asked about the dinner, she said, well, I had made dinner and they were hungry, so I served them dinner. It wasn't even a question. She saw someone who was in need. It happened to be the people who were about to take away her husband, but she still fed them. She showed love in a way that I can't even imagine. A love so deep that it just overflowed, and it was never a big deal because it's what you do. That is what we are called to. Now, I know it is more complicated than this, because I know sometimes we fight about the best way to love people. But you know what? Give me a fight any day about how we best love, rather than what color the carpet should be, right? Give me a fight any day if what's really at the core of it is how are we going to best love one another. It seems so complicated. And it really is hard, because here's the thing. You might love, and there's no guarantee the person you're loving will love you in return. There's no guarantee that you won't be taken advantage of. There's no guarantee that you won't be hurt in some way. And so we resist because we want to protect ourselves. But our God loved so much that he died for it. There are no guarantees, and yet we are called to love.
Don't you feel a whole lot better when you're making a decision based on love than when you're making it on anger or fear? So why do we do it? We need the prayer. We need the prayer. May your love overflow more and more with full knowledge and insight. May you stop making it so complicated. May you not be afraid of what you get in return, but instead always lead in love. Because in the end, it really isn't that complicated. When we learn to lead in love, it becomes so simple. It becomes the work of God. Amen. Thank you.